What's the most underrated skill a pilot should master early in training?
What are some real-world lessons pilots learn after their first 100 hours?
How does flying differ between high-wing and low-wing aircraft?
How do you decide when you're ready to buy your first airplane? Which aviation myths do new pilots often believe that turn out to be false?
One of the ones that I heard.
Welcome to the Aviation Mentors Podcast, the podcast that takes your dreams of flight and turns it into reality.
Sponsored by Strass Financial, financing your flight training.
For pilots, by pilots. I'm Brandon Martini, a commercial pilot and flight instructor.
And I'm Carson Vasquez, I'm a private pilot.
Whether you're a seasoned pilot or beginner with dreams of flight,
Aviation Mentors is your source for expert insights, industry trends, and inspiring stories.
So fasten your seatbelts and prepare for this incredible journey through the skies.
And stay connected with us on social media for exclusive content.
And visit our website at www.aviationmentors.com and let us be your co-pilot on this adventure.
Welcome back, everybody, to another awesome and, of course, amazing episode of the Aviation Mentors Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today. And unfortunately, we also have Carson with us today. I say that only because you did an episode without me just a few days ago, I think.
I did. You did. And it was probably one of the best episodes we've had.
I'm sure
it was. According to my mom.
According to your mom, yes, exactly. So today, we're actually going to take part in some Reddit questions. We've done some listener questions for a while, but we're going to do Reddit questions.
I like these questions.
Excited to talk about Reddit questions. Let's kind of dive into them. We're just going to go, going to dive right in real quick.
All right.
Like a nosedive with no spin at the end.
Yeah, nosedives are notoriously good for your airplane. So,
hey, you know, sometimes.
All right. So number one is, what's the most underrated skill a pilot should master early in training?
Radios.
Radios? Oh,
that was real quick, wasn't it?
That was really easy.
I think that somebody should master radios for sure. Maybe not master per se, so maybe I shouldn't answer it like that.
But get really comfortable with them.
Yeah.
Like I think we talked about just a couple of weeks ago. They're just people. You're talking to just people. And they might have a lot more experience, but you're going to get the message across either way. And even if you say Apple instead of Alpha, they're not going to laugh at you too hard. And the message is going to get across.
And
you're
going to
get where you're going.
They're going to laugh. Which makes somebody feel human.
Yes.
Yeah.
And seriously, I mean, they might sound a little robotic because there's certain phraseology that we use, but you get through it.
You know, speaking of that, I wonder, with all of the aviation issues we're having with ATC right now, I wonder if somebody's going to figure out how to do an AI ATC and like make it a realistic thing.
Like for training or to replace?
To replace. Can you imagine computers just moving airplanes?
It's not too different from like a TCAS system.
It's not.
You know, you see two planes coming at each other. One goes up, one goes down.
I don't know why you could not replace controllers with computers.
I'm sure every controller that's going to hear that will love you for that one.
I'm sure they'll all love me. I mean, I'm sure there's a million reasons why you can't.
It's the age of AI. So, I mean, something's happening. Something's coming.
At some point, pilots will be replaced, but I don't think it's going to happen. It might happen in Carson's lifetime. Maybe mine. But for sure, Austin's. Like in 50 years. 50 years for sure.
Everything will be.
Yeah. They also said we would have like flying cars 80 years ago or something, but that's not happened yet. So yeah, you never know. But at some point.
Yeah, an AI COO. Like that would be.
That one's already happening. all right, next one. What are some real world lessons pilots learn after their first 100 hours? How many hours do you have?
About 300.
Okay. So what did you learn, Carson, after your first 100 hours?
Yeah, after the first 100 hours, I started learning that turbulence is not as scary as you think it is. That was just my biggest fear was hitting turbulence. I'd white knuckle. I'd get sweaty hands. Then I realized that, you know, turbulence has never brought down a plane. It's how the pilot reacts to it.
It has brought down planes. Severe turbulence brings down planes, but most normal turbulence that you did weather briefing for.
Yeah. Turbulence that you can just get caught in, not turbulence that you're like, oh, wow, no one's flying today. I wonder why. Okay. You know, that kind of just awful turbulence. That can. Yeah, of course. But the turbulence that you're going to fly into and the turbulence you're going to brief and feel comfortable to fly into is not going to bring you down. And you just have to control the plane, but don't try and fight it. Don't try and fight everything.
Yeah. I would say another real world lesson that I learned were actually two things. One, everyone thinks you're super pilot at 100 hours, like that you think that you're the best in the world. Newsflash.
You're like a 14-year-old. You don't know anything yet.
Yeah. You're the most dangerous at that point. Exactly. And then also, density altitude is a real thing. And density altitude is a real thing, not just flying in the mountains, flying in the desert where
It's hot.
Where it's hot and you can't maintain altitude and you are just basically stalling over the desert at 1,000 feet AGL. Like these are things that happen or can happen. So be careful with that type of stuff. All right.
How does flying differ between high wing and low wing aircraft? I know Brian's response to this, but
very little.
Yeah. A plane's a plane.
A plane is a plane. The only thing that it changes is your view out of the cockpit.
Well, there's one more thing that changes, I think. And something I've seen a lot about on Reddit lately and Facebook, switching fuel tanks. Because in a high wing, you have the, at least a good chunk of them, you have the both tanks option.
Oh, yeah.
And on a low wing, it's all fuel pumps, or at least to fuel pumps to start. I mean, it depends on the plane, of course. So I'm just generalizing here. But switching between tanks is an important thing that you have to remember. And going from training on Cessna 172s to flying Pipers right after, that was something I had to get used to.
That is a big thing that you'd have to get used to. I would fully agree. Yeah. You're right. That is something extra. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right.
What do you wish you knew before starting multi-engine training?
Turning off an engine is not simulated. I really thought that we would just simulate turning off an engine.
You just like power it back.
You just power it back, just like you do in every other training session, right? No, multi-engine, you actually turn off one of your motors in the air. I used to think this is so dangerous and so scary. And now
Not that it's not, but when you're ready for it and you're prepared, you have an MEI next to you, you're doing the training, or you've had it, you know, 100 times like Brian has.
And then once it actually happens in real life, you just go control, power, drag, identify, verify, fix, or feather.
Yeah.
Floor to door and door to floor, baby. Let's make this happen.
What about like when it's like critical phases of flight and it happens? I mean, yeah, I saw that video from Fullerton Airport, right? Fullerton?
Well, that was for a different reason. That was a VMC incident because he had a control lock still on.
Sure. But I mean, like during that phase of flight, when you have a...
control, power, drag, identify, verify, fix, or feather.
You just have to do it quicker?
Yeah. You do it as fast as I just said it.
Oh, okay.
That's how fast it happens. You push up control, well, control the airplane, power, everything full forward, identify, dead foot, dead engine, verify, yep, it happened. Let's feather that baby real quick.
Okay, I understand.
And then just fly the airplane. I say fix or feather. If it happens in a critical phase of flight, take off, just feather it immediately.
Fix it later.
If you can fix it, great, fix it later.
That's the coolest thing about multi-engine. You have another engine, one other engine.
Exactly. Sometimes more than that. You know what time it is, Carson?
Time is it, Brandon?
It's time to talk about one of our favorite companies.
Which company would that be?
Aviation Mentors is excited to be sponsored by the one and only Stratus Financial, dedicated to supporting the next generation of future aviators.
You know, Stratus Financial really understands the financial challenges that students face in pursuing their aviation dreams. That's why they offer student loans specifically tailored to aspiring pilots.
With competitive rates and flexible repayment plans, Stratus Financial helps take your aviation education to new heights.
So go visit their website today at www.stratus.finance. Just to be clear, that is not .com, it's .finance. And embark on your journey towards a sky full of possibilities.
Carson, it's time to get back to what we do best.
The show.
All right, let's see. Carson, which aviation myths do new pilots often believe that turn out to be false?
One of the ones that I heard back in my day was...
Back in my day,
working at NextGen, it was actually a really common fear of stalls. And, you know, Brandon had that same fear. But when you think about stall, you've always driven a car, been around cars. And when you hear about a car stalling with their engine, that means their engine shut off for any reason. So when you hear about, we're going to go do stalls today and practice stalls, you think, oh my gosh, that engine's going to turn off right in front of me. Why are we doing that? That's not at all what stalls mean. So that's a pretty big misconception that a lot of people have.
By the way, I really wish I had like, oh my, good Lord, like that audio clip just to go boop right there then.
That'd be a good one.
Unfortunately,
we gotta spend some time programming these buttons.
We do.
I gotta get your soundboard back.
I need my soundboard back. I need it back. I'm sure there's people that miss it. Or people that don't.
I think most people don't. Sorry, bud. Well, I got another question for you.
Sure.
How do pilots mitigate the risk of spatial disorientation in IMC?
Oh, thank you for that. Focus on your instruments. Focus on your instruments. And then...
So you're not looking at the clouds.
What's the other one? Focus on your instruments.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I heard something about...
Here's a better one. That's like what you should do. Here's another one. Utilize your co-pilot a little bit. especially if they're not feeling disoriented. And then on top of that, which is probably the best thing you should do, is use your autopilot if you have one.
Just trust your instruments.
Trust them. Know them. Use them. Cross-check.
I mean, if you're in normal flight in VFR any other day, and you check your instruments, you're not going to think that's wrong, right? So why during IMC would you think that's wrong? Your body's telling you something, but those instruments have not lied to you.
Not usually.
I mean, they can. They can break. Things can happen. But odds are, in IMC, that is not what's occurring.
I would fully agree.
Spatialist orientation.
Usually is.
And the clouds are not that pretty to look at. You got a lot more going on. Look inside the cockpit. Don't look outside.
Yeah, they're pretty ugly outside. It just looks like darkness.
Darkness and bumpy and some wet. Yeah, it's just, yeah, it's not fun.
All right.
How do you balance flying as a hobby with a full-time job or family life? Do you have either of those?
Well, as of lately, I don't fly as much. But when I first started learning how to fly in 2014, I think it was 2014, Austin was like 3 years old or something. Yeah, 3 years old. Austin was 3 years old.
You take him on every flight with you?
No. And his mom, in general, we had a house that we just moved to. And I was trying to do like family life all the time back then, right? And I had a full-time job. I actually had a full-time job and another full-time part-time job, because I was just trying to make it. I was a little younger and I was in a different industry than I am now. And I just decided I would go flying, especially when I was learning to fly. I picked 2 to 3 days a week, and those were the days I went flying, either in the morning or the afternoon. And I just decided.
Which is what everybody should do, just to be clear.
Yeah, you need to plan it. And now nothing's changed in my life. If I don't plan or calendar something, it never happens. So plan and calendar things. Get the support of your family, your husband or your wife, whoever's not the flyer, get them to come out and come to the airport and see what the camaraderie is about. Bring them to the hangar days and let them experience what the barbecue and talking to all your new friends are. Include them. And that really will help you with your family life, because then they'll see, oh, wow, there's something more to this than just my husband or my wife spending a whole bunch of money on some new hobby, right? They're going to see like there's a community involved. There's something that's really
special. It's a lot more than just being up in the sky.
Yeah, there's more to it. Even if they don't want to go flying, let them feel the community. I think that's probably one of the best parts about aviation, to be honest.
If they want to go flying, you can also just get them a demo flight. It's usually, you know, cost of a fraction of your lesson.
Yeah.
And it just helps them understand why you want to do what you're doing.
Exactly. All right. I think we've got time for maybe one more. Carson, I'm going to ask you this. How do you decide when you're ready to buy your first airplane?
When you look in your bank account and you have more than $5, you are ready. It is time to make it happen.
To buy that airplane. I would say once you start flying, here's the legit answer, over 100 hours a year.
You did some math. And I remember you put it on the whiteboard for me and we were talking about it, you know, ad nauseum. And it just made a lot of sense. You're like, you're renting this plane this many hours, you're doing instruction. And at some point, you know, 100 hours might be not the exact number, but it's a rough number. That's just the point that it makes more sense.
It really does. Or if you really are tired of flying clapped out airplanes from a local flight school and that's all you have access to, you might want something nicer. But just know it's going to be a lot more expensive than renting.
Yeah, depends on your mission, depends on the plane that you're getting, right? 100 hours is, yeah, if you're flying a 172, then you want to go get a Diamond, was it? DA-40.
That's DA-42, DA-62.
That's going to be a little bit more than 100 hours to offset that. Unless it's something they're interested in. But we've talked about this at length too.
We have.
Depends on the mission. Depends on what you're looking for.
Always depends on the mission. Perfect. Well, I think we are going to close it out there. Thank you again for listening today. We really, really appreciate it. By the way, don't forget, we have this amazing scholarship out. If you're studying to become a pilot, we have the scholarship for you. Stratus Financial is giving away a $10,000 scholarship to one lucky flight school student to pay for their flight training. You must already be a private pilot or better to qualify, but it goes to the flight school of your choice anywhere in the U.S. or Puerto Rico. The deadline to apply is June 20th. Winner will be announced by me at Oshkosh Air Venture and on the Stratus Financial social media channels. At Oshkosh, which I am very, very excited about.
I bet you are.
It is super easy to apply. Just head to stratus.finance/scholarship for all the details. Again, www.stratus.finance/scholarship. Remember, there's no.com there. Check it out. If someone you know could use a financial boost to achieve their goals of becoming a commercial pilot, let them know. We really want to give this away to somebody who is well-deserving. And guess who's going to have a little bit of input? I am. Carson might have a little as well. So make sure you are applying. Why not take 10 grand? who knows? You might only have five people and you might be like one out of five. That's a 20% chance of winning. Honestly, go apply for all the scholarships, every single one of them.
It's a huge help.
Yeah, you can get it. Carson won one a long time ago and it helped him. This one can definitely help you. So as always, if you'd like to reach out to either one of us, you can reach us on our emails, Brandon@aviationmentors.com or Carson@aviationmentors.com. For our producer, Mark, it is, of course, producer@aviationmentors.com. Don't forget to hit like, follow, subscribe, share, all the things that you're supposed to do on social media or YouTube. It really helps us grow the aviation community and, of course, helps us grow the podcast. So we really appreciate you. Thank you so much for listening or watching us today.
Thank you, everyone. As we wrap up for the day, remember, here to guide you in your aviation journey. So fly safe and enjoy the ride.
See you.